Thanks for joining us on the DenverBroncos.com podcast. I'm your host, Ben Swanson, and with me, as always, is our own Andrew Mason. And last week, we kind of left on a bit of a cliffhanger. I said there'd probably be news this week, obviously with the franchise tag deadline early in the week, there'd obviously be something. But then we finally got the big news a little bit later in the week. David Bruton met with a Globetrotter. Groundbreaking. They learned some tricks or something. I don't know. I stayed home sick that day, so I wasn't able to attend.
It wasn't bad. I mean, the first try, he tried to do the spinning the basketball trick. He failed, but then the second try, he got it. The only thing is, they were talking about how they're going to play the Washington Generals on Saturday night, and I couldn't help but think of, I think it was Krusty the Clown on The Simpsons betting the rights to license his name on the Generals, claiming that they were due. He's spinning the ball. Just take it from. And that's what goes to my addled mind when I'm at an event like this is Simpsons quotes. But
I almost let the story off with that.
Yeah. I think it's what people of a couple of generations think of, but.
Oh, this is this is apparently the first time in like 5 years they've played. Like they haven't played them in like 5 years. The Generals.
I guess you just get tired of beating up on an opponent after a while. And,
they have 14,000 losses and like maybe a handful of wins.
And many of them coached and played in by the late great Red Klotz.
Exactly.
Who did? I believe he. They did. They beat him once. I know.
Yeah.
He hit the game winning shot.
The quote was, it was like shooting Santa Claus. And so the crowd was just, like, kids were crying. Everyone was upset. I was like, this isn't supposed to happen.
Yeah, and the thing is, the Generals they generally make the team up of, former college basketball players. You know, guys, they're not slouches. That's got to be just an ego-sapping, manhood-robbing experience. You just go out there, you play straightforward ball, you play hard.
I mean, if they want to sign me, I'll come for cheaper. I mean, I'm okay. I've got the integrity where I can just be like, I'll go out there and try my hardest, and I'm no great basketball player. I'll lose.
I could see you trying to pull a Muggsy Bogues at your height and just reach behind almost and just take and reach behind and reach under and just take the ball and just take the ball on the dribble and leave the guy flat foot. But
that's the only advantage you have at this size.
Yes.
I'm 5'8", and the only advantage you have playing people who are, I don't play people who are 6'6", but playing, 5'10", 6 foot, is I have a lower center of gravity and I can reach for the ball a little bit easier.
There's another thing you could do with that lower center of gravity. If you could be an NFL running back, but probably have to have a little bit more bulk for that one, I think.
I kind of dreamed of playing running back in high school, but I'm very I'm thin. I don't hit the weight room, so there was no chance. In high school gym class, I actually played defensive end and offensive tackle. Mostly because we had probably about a 7-man team, and there's only one lineman or two linemen and one defensive lineman.
Okay,
or two.
So 7-man football. That I could see. Before you said 7-man, and you said offensive tackle, I think my jaw was about to hit the ground. I had trouble coming to a coherent thought for about 5 seconds after you said that.
Well, it wasn't an organized sport per se. It was more of a just go out there and burn off your lunch kind of thing.
It's the ultimate frisbee of football.
Hey, I took ultimate frisbee in college. That was my college exercise class.
Oh my gosh! Wow, I took. I don't. You know what? I think that's the difference between our generations.
Well, it was
in the mid '90s. We didn't have that in college. I took bowling and golf.
See, I took bowling in high school. But the exercise classes at UNC were great because they had so many choices. It was like, how do we have this many choices? There was like running, there was intermediate running, there was walking, intermediate walking, swimming. There was
the running course that was not prefaced by intermediate, was that like basic running and then intermediate running?
Yeah, I think you might have gone slower or something.
Basic walking. that sounds like something that you'd give to preschoolers.
Yeah.
A course option for 2.5 year old.
You know, it's just motor skills, getting those down.
Yeah, my daughter's already on running now, so I think she may be actually advancing in intermediate running the way she's making me chase her around the house right now.
The funniest thing that I saw is one time it was like snowy or something, so we had to go inside, and there was Tyler Zeller playing basketball in his indoor sports, you know, class. Mm-hmm. I think he was a first year like I was, and there he was playing basketball.
I'm sure Roy Williams and the staff were thrilled about him. You'd think that they would get a credit.
I think it's one credit for actually playing
in the sport, yeah, on an intercollegiate level.
Maybe you could be exempt. It's like an AP course.
Sure.
Yeah, that was always kind of astounding, but I enjoyed my ultimate Frisbee class, and I was close enough. I hope the TA do his some kind of grad student project. I would go in for some tests and get my blood drawn and all this, and so I could turn in like I had to watch videos and answer quizzes online. I could just turn those in whenever.
See, the thing about my golf class when I was in college, the greatest shot I ever had was when I holed out from 100 yards out, and nobody saw, and the only people who saw were my instructor and people in the class, and it didn't count toward a round. And isn't there something else that happened this week? It escapes my mind.
Well, there's a couple things. I think the biggest news, judging by the number of TV trucks and cameras that were outside of work today, I would say today's news, this is Thursday, today's news was Peyton Manning returning to the team for 2015.
Oh, that guy.
Yeah, it was a bit of a big question that was kind of lingering for a while. Obviously, there were some things they had to negotiate, and John Elway said he wanted Peyton to have time to make a decision without having the impact of the season's end right there, you know, still in the back of his mind, and, you know, be able to make a pretty objective decision on his own about whether he wanted to come back or not.
Yeah, and even though at the Combine, Elway mentioned that Peyton Manning had all the time that he needed, realistically, we all knew that March 9th was the key date, because that's when Peyton Manning's contract for 2015, the money that he's owed, becomes guaranteed. So you knew one way or another something was going to happen by March 9th, and turned out the final stage of that was Thursday morning when Peyton had his annual physical. Everything checked out. You know, he's been working out down in New Orleans over the past several weeks. With some trainers who, and a trainer in particular who specializes in lengthening professional athletes' careers as they get into their 30s and even to their 40s. So, you know, it's all said and done. Number 18's back for a fourth Broncos season, and 18th in the NFL. And while it's been sport for some fans to sit out there and criticize Manning and say that the Broncos might be better off without him this year, let's be realistic. If you don't have Peyton Manning, you've got an incredibly uncertain situation, and your range of potential records is all over the place. I mean, you could be 12-4 if everything worked out. You could be 3-13. With Peyton Manning back, you're working at a much higher floor than most other teams. If he plays all 16 games, you'd have to figure the floor for this team is 9-7. That's if everything goes wrong, and Manning still plays. And the ceiling, I think, is world championship. And in spite of the losses this team may take in free agency next week, as a lot of contracts expire and some of the Broncos on the market become coveted properties, you know, this team's still going to have a very good shot as long as number 18's back there. And he may even do better in this tweaked offense that Gary Kubiak is installing, that's melding some concepts the Broncos have used the last 3 years and some concepts from the Kubiak offenses, both in Houston, Baltimore, and, of course, in Denver as an offensive coordinator.
I mean, for all the questions that was said about Manning's fit, I mean, the guy who knows better than most people is going to be John Elway, who played in his system as a quarterback who was nearing the end of his career and wanted a championship. I mean, Elway has been a more nimble quarterback, I would say. But, I mean, the question seemed a little bit overblown, and I think at this point everyone's just ready to see this fit going forward.
Yeah, and look at the success Joe Flacco had last year. He's younger, but he's not exactly going to wow anyone with his agility in the backfield. Seemed to do just fine in Gary Kubiak's offense. And saying that the system can't work with Peyton Manning, frankly, I think it's insulting to both Gary Kubiak and Peyton Manning. It's insulting to Manning because when you've had the kind of career that he has, and you have this sort of cerebral understanding of the game that I think we can say with some certainty is pretty much unparalleled in the game's history. You're saying he can't adapt to a new offense? And Gary Kubiak, he's one of the best offensive coordinators and offensive minds in the game the last two decades, and of course got Houston going for what is its most successful run to date. You're saying that he can't tweak his offense to fit Peyton Manning's skill set? I mean, come on. I mean, he's had different types of quarterbacks. He's won with different types of quarterbacks. I mean, you look back on his career as a coordinator and a head coach. He's gotten Pro Bowl seasons out of Jake Plummer, Brian Greasy, in Houston, Matt Schaub. I think he can do all right with Peyton Manning.
The point about Peyton Manning being so cerebral is pretty interesting, because I was just reading an article on Sports Illustrated's website that Joe Neeson wrote about the work he does and the work he does with running backs as far as getting them up to speed on his level. Just the kind of challenges he makes sure the running backs are prepared for. It's almost like a crash course for a lot of these guys who come in as young players and have to learn a lot of protections they didn't necessarily need to know in college or especially high school too. But I thought that was really interesting reading about that and how C.J. Anderson's kind of learned that pretty quickly.
Well, it's interesting to look at the Broncos running backs. You know, I think you can certainly say that guys like C.J. Anderson, who went to Cal, Juwan Thompson out of Duke, Monte Ball, you know, out of Wisconsin, very smart guy. These are the kinds of cerebral backs that really, you know, fit what Peyton Manning is trying to do and really know how to pick up what he's trying to do. Now, it doesn't mean there's not some bumps. I mean, we can look back at the regular season when Peyton...
Oh, it's a high learning curve.
Yeah, and like even like Peyton kind of, you know, would grab Juwan Thompson by his jersey and tell him, okay, you've got to block this guy. You know, this is where you're going to go when you're in pass protect. And of course, that turned out to be exactly where Juwan Thompson needed to go. But that's, you know, but that's just part of being a rookie. You could see last year with C.J. Anderson, especially in the second half of the season, just how comfortable he was and how he was on the same page with Peyton Manning. And you factor in what Gary Kubiak can bring, and especially in terms of creating a potent running game, having C.J. Anderson, who knows, you know, Manning's ins and outs now after the last couple of years, and having the confidence that comes from being a Pro Bowl running back after being a starter for the second half of the 2014 season. This could work out pretty well and may even take the offense to the next level if there is one.
Well, that was an offense that had 6 Pro Bowlers last year, and obviously some guys are free agents. But with Peyton Manning's return kind of sealed up now and official and finalized, we thought that would be kind of the first domino before free agency begins. You know, you have Demaryius Thomas back, who we haven't even talked about really. And then you have Peyton. That's kind of like the offensive core. And now with those guys wrapped up, you know, you can focus on decisions that have to be made for free agency.
Right. And, of course, those are two important parts of the construction process.
That's the core, right?
Yeah, they're the core, and also just simply the financial outlay involved with the two of them. You're talking about a hair over $30 million under the salary cap between the two of them for 2015. So you're starting with that, and you're building out. Having, you know, obviously that's a big commitment to have for a couple of guys, but once you know that, then you can start figuring out the pieces that either you retain or you have to bring in, or maybe even develop on your own roster. At the scouting combine, Gary Kubiak and John Elway were talking up guys like Matt Paradis and Michael Schofield as potential options along the offensive line. That's going to be part of figuring of establishing, you know, your budget for this year. Saying, okay, are any of these young guys ready for bigger roles? And if they are, great, because they're cost controlled players. And if you have faith in some of those young guys to go to step up and expand their roles and succeed, then you can take what's left under the salary cap. Maybe you can throw a little more at one big target when free agency comes in, or maybe you can keep one of the guys that perhaps you thought you might not be able to keep.
And with Demaryius Thomas's franchise tag, I mean, that's something that John Elway said was going to happen at the combine. He said that if they can't get anything, you know, figured out for a long-term contract, we're just going to franchise tag him and then come back to it at a later time. The Broncos' past with franchise tags have been pretty successful along those lines. Mm-hmm. excuse me. You go back to, was it Clady, I think, was the most recent one, or was it?
Ryan Clady, and then before that, Matt Prater, and then going way before that, a previous administration, Jason Elam, turned a franchise tag into a long-term deal. But that just showed the success they had with Prater and Ryan Clady. It's a good sign. That being said, given the market for wide receivers, and given, I mean, what the franchise tender, the tender is alone, it's a, you know, $12.823 million to Demaryius Thomas. Given that, you figure that a long-term deal's not going to be cheap. And that's something that the Broncos have to consider in their long-term planning. Don't forget, they've got Von Miller with an expiring contract after this season as well. So I think anything they try to do with Demaryius Thomas long-term, Von Miller and what they feel they have to budget for him to get him signed long-term, that's going to have an impact as well.
Well, with free agency down the line, the Broncos also made another move on Thursday, signing, or re-signing, I should say, long snapper Aaron Brewer. From what you were telling me, that's kind of just like trying to, you know, get this out of the way as well. You know, not to say that Aaron Brewer is something you just get out of the way, but, you know, getting his contract done and getting that, you know, all signed, sealed, and delivered just is one less thing they have to worry about. What other impacts of that? I mean, this is a guy who they picked up as a college free agent 3 years ago, and he's played every special team snap since.
Yeah, I mean, you have a comfort zone with an accurate long snapper like Aaron Brewer. You know that he's going to be reliable. Coaches, head coaches in particular, don't like to worry about the long snapper. It's something that it's almost like the air in this room. Or electricity to turn on the lights.
It's there, you don't think about it.
Exactly, you don't want to think about it, and you only think about the electricity when you turn the lights, turn on the light switch, and nothing happens. And it's similar to, you know, long snapping. You only notice it when there's a bad snap. And Aaron Brewer has avoided that, so he's earned the trust and the confidence of the organization. It's a good sign for him, certainly, with a new special teams coordinator and Joe DeCamillis, that they make this kind of commitment. I think it shows you that DeCamillis likes what he sees from Aaron Brewer and wants to use him as a building block. And the other thing to consider, he was a restricted free agent. Now, as an undrafted 3-year veteran who is an RFA, his tender would have been $1.52 million. That's an estimate based on what it was last year, and then factoring in the increase in the salary cap. That's how you come to that calculation. The veteran minimum for a 4-year vet is $745,000, so it's not even half of what the RFA tender would have been. Now, it's one of those things where, you know, both sides get something out of that. If the Broncos can get a little bit of relief immediately, because that RFA tender would have you know, would have counted immediately under their salary cap. But the other key thing about it is it's not guaranteed. You only make that money if you make the 53-man roster. So it would. So what you can do with this kind of deal, yeah, you're not going to maybe not you're not going to get as much as the RFA tender would have been, but you're able to make it to you know make it up and offer guarantees and offer kind of the assurance of a 4-year deal that says, hey, we're confident in you. We think you can get this done. You can be the answer for the long haul. So it's one of those types of situations that's symbiotic.
On a busy day like this, we're not the only team that's made that's made moves. The 49ers signed Darnell Dockett, who was released by the Cardinals, I guess, was it 2 days ago? Something like that?
Last week.
Oh, last week. Okay.
Late last week.
Yeah. So he signed with the 49ers early on Thursday. 2-year, $7.5 million with them, as it's reported. What do you think is the impact of this move?
Well, if you're the 49ers, you get a player that you know well from playing him twice a year in the division, a player that's terrorized you at times. I think, however, it's a deal on which the 49ers need to be careful because, you know, first of all, you know, he missed last season, but even...
I was going to say, with his age and the ACL tear, it's kind of right. A risk.
Yeah, he wasn't the old Darnell Dockett even before he got injured last summer. So there's a little bit of a caveat emptor. I think it's a potentially good deal for the 49ers, but at the same time, you've got to be careful if you're them. Make sure you've structured the deal to where if he doesn't have anything left in the tank, then that you can get out of it. But I think this feels to me like one of those contracts that's almost about tweaking a rival as much as bolstering your own roster.
I think the 49ers maybe should have a little bit more on their mind than just tweaking their rivals. The way their season went last year, they've got a lot of work to do.
I guess they figure you weaken your foe by poaching someone from them, but they didn't really poach him because he was cut. And the other thing to consider is how good the Cardinals' defense was without Darnell Dockett. They didn't miss him.
Yeah.
So that tells me about where he was at this age in his career. He had some great years, but those great years haven't happened in quite some time.
As far as other things going around the league, since the last time we were on the podcast, obviously with the franchise tag deadline coming and going, the Lions did not decide to tag Ndamukong Suh. So Suh becomes a free agent. Reports say he's going to visit with the Raiders, which obviously within the division, and with a new head coach who's obviously very familiar with the Broncos, could be a bit of a formidable foe, as Jack Del Rio is obviously a defensive-minded head coach.
Well, they've got $50 million of cap room.
Might as well spend it.
They've got to spend it somewhere. Suh would certainly transform their front line, but I don't think he would be the only move by any stretch of the imagination. They're probably going to be pretty busy, and obviously with Del Rio and the Broncos connection, you may want to watch that. Although Dennis Allen, the last Raiders full-time head coach, you know, he came from Denver. He didn't necessarily beat down the path to Denver to find free agents. So I'm sure they're going to look around the league. And Suh, I think, may take his time. There's been some rumblings connecting him to Miami, perhaps.
Yeah, I've heard that Miami is a front runner.
Right, but there's not many teams that can afford what's likely to be a $20 million a year contract. It would appear for you're talking elite quarterback money. For a defensive tackle, I'm not sure that anyone who's not a quarterback is worth that kind of money. But it seems like Sue is going to do it.
Is he the best free agent on the market this year?
Unless you count the guys who got franchise tenders. I mean, if Justin Houston had not gotten the franchise tender in Kansas City, I would have been inclined to put him at least on the level with Sue, maybe even slightly ahead, because what he does is a little bit more of a premium position, which is working as an edge rusher. But of the guys who are unrestricted, think Sue's head and shoulders top of the class this year.
One of the more interesting things, this is from earlier in the year, but we were talking to players in the locker room about, you know, PFF's ratings and all this, about how, you know, defensive linemen rate out and grading technique and all this. And it's like, well, you know, Ndamukong Suh doesn't need technique.
Yeah.
He's just a monster who terrorizes your offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
He may not rate out so well at technique, but that's not going to stop him from being perhaps the most terrorizing force on a defensive line.
Yeah, and to go back to the Raiders for a moment as a possible destination, I was just seeing it from Jerry McDonald, one of the beat writers who covers the Raiders on Twitter, that with the moves they've made, including Maurice Jones-Drew announcing his retirement today, they're actually, and also the increase in the salary cap, they're actually now close to the $70 million range as far as cap room. That's insane.
I was kind of surprised that he retired, given that, you know, his history with Del Rio. Do you think he might give it another year? But I think the Raiders are probably a little bit devoted to Latavius Murray, who really came on strong last year.
Yeah, much more. He's younger. He's much more effective at this point. You know, Darren McFadden's an unrestricted free agent. I don't think they're going to make much of an
really
attempt to keep
him.
And frankly, he hasn't been the same since the Lisfranc injury that he had a few years ago. I mean, there was he had that brief that brief moment 2010, early in 2011, when he, you know, was, if not the best running back in the game, in the top two or three. I remember I had him on my fantasy team at the time, and I just adored his production for my team. But then he got hurt and really not only hasn't been the same, but hasn't been close to the same.
A Lisfranc injury, much different than a Lisfranc injury, designing children's stuff. I don't really know. Yes, unicorns and things and rainbows, it looks like. Just had to Google it. My Google history is probably not fun if anyone looks that up.
That's why I don't log into Google when I search, because I don't want my Google username reflecting.
You get all those ads.
Yeah, you get all.
I'll get tons of Lisfranc ads.
Yeah, even if you don't log in, it seems to remember. Like, I keep getting advertisements for a hotel at which I stayed last month when I was out in Napa Valley. I mean, I love the place, but I mean, why am I still getting ads for it a month after my vacation? I'm sure the same thing is going to happen this summer when we're down at the beach. Gonna get ads for that hotel and while we're in the preseason.
Let me tell you the tagline on lisafranc.com.
Yeah.
Lisfranc Online. ... The site. This is all caps. Girls love.
Oh gosh. Do I need to learn about this site as my daughter gets older?
That's up to you, I guess.
We'll see where her interests go, but I will say this: when we were talking about going to the beach this summer, and said we'll make sandcastles, and then I chimed in, I said, "Well, we can make a baseball stadium sandcastle." And she just lit up and said baseball. And I guess my wife and I just laughed. I'm like, that's the magic word. That's what I want the magic word to be for my daughter. That's kind of cool.
You know, what was really, I read an interview with Stephen Curry maybe last week, a few days ago, something like that. And it was talking about him, what his favorite class in college was. He went to Davidson, a little bit outside of Charlotte. Mm-hmm. And apparently, he majored in sociology, and his favorite class was like a gender studies class, as it pertained to raising children.
Mm-hmm.
And from what it sounds like, you know, he really enjoyed that class, and that's something like a lot of athletes don't really get a chance to talk about, is stuff they enjoyed in college, because I think there's a bit of a perception. But
well, yeah, not, and certainly not that we, you know, my daughter doesn't wear girls' clothes, but at the same time, if she wants to run around and throw a ball like one of the boys, I mean, we encourage her to do that. You know, that's just, you know, why should a girl have any less opportunities if that's what she wants to do because she's a girl? So the things I never thought about before I had a daughter. Now, you know,
yeah.
It's kind of cool. She even and I can tell you, I didn't teach her this. She must have just picked it up by the games on television. She'll say, "Hurry, hurry," to tie it all into the news of the week with Peyton Manning. You know, if she wants to get going, hurry, hurry.
If we want to wrap it all up here, was there any other moves that made waves with you this week from other teams?
Well, you go back to the end of last week, you know, Green Bay made some news by letting go of A.J. Hawk. Mm-hmm. But the one that jumps out to me is the Houston Texans this week releasing Chris Myers.
Oh, okay.
Not even Andre Johnson. Chris Myers, I think, is the one that's really interesting because, you know, Broncos fans are familiar with him from back in the mid-2000s. 05 draft pick, 07 started at guard, then moved over to center after Tom Nalen suffered a season-ending injury. And then the following offseason got traded, and Houston immediately signed him to a four-year deal. Not a good trade when you look back on it from 2008 because the Broncos got a sixth-round pick, really, you know, pennies on the dollar at that point. The guy they picked, Spencer Larson, played four seasons, best remembered for the Atlanta game back in 08 when he started on both offense and defense at fullback and linebacker, but certainly didn't match up to the production of Chris Myers, who was a two-time Pro Bowler, one of the most effective centers in the league, and certainly was a perfect fit for zone blocking. And so, given the connections between the Broncos and the Texans because of, you know, Gary Kubiak and Rick Dennison being on the staff there, there may be a potential need at center or even at guard, depending on what happens in free agency. It was hard to see the Chris Myers release and not take note of it and think that even though he's getting on in years, he's getting into his mid-30s, might he be a potential good option for the Broncos to sign a 1 or 2 year deal at certainly a much more cap friendly price than some of these guys who are going into their second contracts. Given his familiarity with Kubiak and the offense, he slipped a bit last year, but that, you know, so that may be age, that may be scheme, and not being quite as good a fit in what Bill O'Brien wanted to do as what Gary Kubiak did. We'll see, but certainly that's one that's interesting. I think Broncos fans may want to pay attention to what happens with Chris Myers in the next few weeks.
It'll definitely be interesting to see as we get closer and closer. You know, the legal tampering period's rapidly approaching.
Well, yeah, and Myers wouldn't be subject to the tampering because he's a street free agent. All those guys who've been cut, you can bring him in whenever. I mean, James right. Casey has already been in, visited the Broncos. He was here a week ago. The legal tampering period begins at 2 p.m. Mountain Standard Time Saturday. You cannot bring a free agent to your headquarters. You can talk to him on the phone. You can negotiate with the agent over the phone. And it's because of that legal tampering period that when you get to 2 p.m. Mountain Daylight Time on Tuesday, when the new league year begins and the free agency period kicks off, that's why you have a flurry of signings and agreed to terms when that starts, is because the groundwork usually has been laid during that legal tampering period over the weekend. So it's going to be very busy.
Yes, indeedy. And we'll be back next week, probably Thursday, probably Friday, something like that, for next week's podcast. I want to thank everyone for joining us and listening in, and we'll catch y'all next week.